Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. Why is so much of the news celebrity journalism? And why does anybody give a darn about some vapid celebrity concocted? Always by the corporate-controlled media. We'll hear a couple of interesting approaches here. First, a passage from a new documentary film called Star Suckers. These people say that paying attention to celebrities may be hardwired into people through millennia of evolution. And it's a great way for corporations to lure money from your wallet into theirs. After that, we'll hear journalist and political analyst Chris Hedges say, well, something pretty similar. Here is Star Suckers.
In the previous lesson, you saw how a lucky few can get trapped inside the spotlight. Our third lesson is about your irresistible attraction to them and how we manipulate this for profit. Evolution can sometimes produce hardwired behavior that generations later causes you problems, like moths flying into a light. Long ago, moths that instinctively flew towards the moon were better at navigating, and this urge got handed down. But now technology has changed their surroundings, and this instinct is more of a hindrance. Darwinists believe that humans also developed powerful urges that kept them alive in times gone by.
Our brains are hardwired to make us social. Very few people can really tolerate social isolation for any length of time.
There is a theory that in the past, there were two types of human. Those who naturally wanted to form groups and those who wanted to be alone. The team players were able to share tasks, and so were able to survive when times got tough, unlike the loners. So the survivors passed on the urge to be part of a group that modern man has inherited. Some early humans instinctively copied the successful, while others tried to learn alone. Well, it's not difficult to see why those who copied the leader would stay ahead of the competition. This is your inheritance, making you naturally copy whoever appears to be the leader of your gang. What if there was also an urge to get as close as possible to whoever you're told is the most successful? Now, this would have been good for women who would have got to mate with the top dom. And those men closest to the alpha male would have gotten to share his women as well as any leftover food. And anyone who naturally didn't want to join an entourage wasn't going to do much reproducing. So it is possible that you have evolved with an instinct to form groups. Copy whoever appears to be successful and to congregate around them. But then technology advanced so quickly that it became possible to convince the mind that a moving image is real. As soon as the trick was used to entertain an audience, our industry was born. By entertaining the world, we were able to grow into powerful and influential corporations. Now, our reach is unparalleled. And we deliver media to you and your children in ways that you cannot control. When we surround you with famous faces, your survival instincts kick in, and you feel the urge to get up close and copy them. This has created a new social hierarchy based around your proximity to anyone well known.
Here, several young adults are interviewing for a job as personal assistant to a celebrity. Each is willing to give up quite a lot in order to gain a position in the celebrity's entourage. If you can't be a celebrity yourself, joining his entourage is the next best thing.
It's a bespoke private celebrity PA agency. What attracted you to the advert? Why did you look at the advert and say, that's something I want to do?
Well, it's clearly simple. It says celebrity PA. Mm-hmm. and they were looking for someone in the industry who really understands what that word means.
Celebrity PA.
Flexibility and motivation. Yeah. I mean, they're buying in the system in a way as well, like a pet.
And they can kick the pet.
Well, unfortunately, they shouldn't do that, but...
I've been working as an actor for about a year since leaving uni. I actually brought a CV with me just for general interest, really.
Yeah, always good.
Slided across there. I thought, well, it'd be far more interesting to work in the industry.
Let's say you're working for a very high-profile celebrity whose wife is, you know, getting on a bit, and he's having a series of affairs. What if one of the girls was 16?
That's not really a problem.
15?
To be honest, if a 15-year-old girl wants to do that, she's going to do it anyway. Good on her if she gets to do it with a celebrity.
I mean, you're quite young, obviously got a social life. Would you be happy to give all that up?
Yeah.
Not see your friends or family?
Yeah, that would be fine.
They need 5 grams of coke.
That's fine.
If you drove, would you break the speed limit?
No.
You wouldn't break the speed limit?
I try not to.
You know, the rules, they always to break them, you know. That's what the rules for. You always have to break them. But I'm never driving anyway on the limit.
What if they wanted to pay for sex and they said to you, find me a prostitute?
I would do that. I did that. I had to do that as well. And basically, this is your job.
Even if things are illegal or...
Even. You just have to do it.
You are the gatekeeper to the celebrities' life. They have crazy people after them. Stalkers, psychos, nuts, crack bags, the whole thing. I mean, would that worry you?
No. I know it sounds really weird, but do you ever get this feeling where you just want a bit of adventure in your life?
Yeah.
Bit like a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this all sounds fantastic to me.
But you might end up taking a bullet for them. Does that worry you?
Surprisingly, no. Stupid thing to say, you know, I wouldn't mind taking a bullet for someone I don't know, but I wouldn't. That's the sort of adventure and adrenaline I need in my life.
Yeah, best of luck.
Nice to meet you.
It's great. Nice to meet you. Thank you.
Cheers.
Again, there's some interesting research on this. They call the phenomenon basking in reflected glory. In this study, students, and there were several hundred of them, read a short biography of Rasputin, you know, the villain of Russian history. For half of them, they customized the test so that Rasputin had the same birthday as you did, without you knowing. So you're like, here, my birthday is July 28th, so I'm reading it, and Rasputin was born July 28th, whenever. The people that had the same birthday as Rasputin were across the board more likely to say Rasputin was a misunderstood man in history. He was notorious, but he was great, and he played an important role, and that shouldn't be forgotten. And this is just because they share a birthday. The power of association with someone who's famous or even infamous is far more potent than we even realize.
No matter how many celebrities we create, it's never going to be possible for everybody to join an entourage. But there are other ways we can exploit your need to be close to the famous, all from the comfort of your own living room.
Television probably played the biggest part here, because with television, there's an illusion of intimacy, in that visual image, now quite realistic, can be right in one's home, giving us the illusion that we actually know these people.
There is no way evolution could have anticipated the internet. And therefore, we are stuck with a kind of brain machinery which was designed to handle face-to-face interactions. It was not designed to handle virtual interactions. It is a brave new world from that point of view, and that does mean it's easily exploited by people who can figure out how to use that medium to their advantage.
A parasocial relationship is one of those awful technical terms which sounds more fancy than it really is. It simply means that you have a relationship with somebody which is not based upon a face-to-face relationship. It's based upon what you know about that person through the press, what you know about that person through watching him or her on television, despite the fact that you never actually meet the celebrity. I say to my students that the only example that I know of where people have this deep emotional attachment to someone they've never met is the attachment that some people have to God. But the parasocial relationship is created by the media, fueled by the media.
And we all do it.
We all do it, yes.
The more celebrities we create, the more we can capitalize on these bonds. And the younger these relationships are formed, the stronger they're going to be.
A whole virgin, I'm posted a Zac Efron.
Zac Efron.
Now, I think there's some things that celebrities do that play right into this trick of the box. Pretending it's a two-way relationship, I think, enhances this.
Yeah, I feel like there's a connection there. Yeah, and he loves me.
There is this terrifying prospect that I have that it is actually replacing what we used to call real life, that people are developing stronger imaginary relationships with people who are themselves imaginary constructions, people who are not real.
And our purpose in encouraging you to make one-way friendships? It's simple. To make you buy stuff. Your urge to copy the famous influences your spending, whether you like it or not.
You see how easy it is to keep a man happy? Why not give your husband a carton of Philip Morris cigarettes?
Delivers flavor 20 times a pack.
When it's tougher than ever to be a tiger.
Success is down to finding people like this.
Now for the good bit.
If you have a debt problem and a prudent approach to banking, you could borrow anything.
Which could be up to 3.5 times your salary.
£1 million.
As long as you keep paying the premium.
Is that too much to ask?
It's going to cost a big fortune this
long. Don't treat me like an idiot.
Do you have any special advice for the young people who drive?
Take it easy driving. The life you might save might be mine.
Celebrity endorsement works on an emotional level. We process emotions and we process rational thought in different parts of the brain. So the limbic system, which is the very old part of the brain that sort of says, lion on savannah, run away. And that's where we process things on an emotional, almost gut feel level.
Imagine a horse and a rider. That piece of the brain is like the horse just working away.
And that's where we make decisions and do maths and use spreadsheets, and we try to control the more instinctive parts of our brains. That's like the rider. But sometimes the rider loses control of the horse. And it's been shown in experiments. If you ask people, would you like fruit salad or chocolate cake? People will go, well, I should take the fruit salad because that's the sensible thing to do, so they'll take the fruit salad. But if you give them a really difficult task to do beforehand, so they're mentally exhausted, they'll go for the chocolate cake because that's their instinct. And that's how it seems to be with a lot of emotional advertising that's not well labelled. We just process it instinctively.
These forms of advertising are most effective when you're not even aware that you're being sold to.
This is Hannah Montana. It's time to wake up. Seriously, it is. You know what else is serious? Back to school shopping. So gather your list of school supplies, and don't forget Walmart has the Hannah Montana gear, the fashion, and the music you love. So be a superstar yourself and get your things together. And have fun, and good luck this year at school.
Children up to the age of 8, 9, 10 don't really understand the persuasive intent of advertisements. There are people in there trying to sell you something.
I've no doubt our society would be much better if there was a total ban on advertising for any child under 12 and really limiting advertising towards teenagers.
It's possible that there is a link between increasing materialism and the mental health problems that an increasing number of our children show.
In the last 10 years, something has shifted. The number of young people now that would say that a good life is about money, it's about fame, it's about appearance, has shot up dramatically. That's what our young people believe, and why wouldn't they? Because that's the value system that they're picking up from the media. The media do not want to hear this message. It is not in their interest for people to be saying that part of the problem with well-being or confidence or whatever might be the media. And that one of the best and easiest ways for people to actually look after their mental health is to cut down on media consumption. They don't like it.
As we set the public agenda, we'll avoid giving exposure to anything that will discourage you wanting more of our product. By attaching a product to a familiar and likable face, we've developed an unstoppable means of making you spend what you don't have on things you don't need. Most people will say that these tricks don't affect them, but that makes the tricks even more potent. How can you fight something if you don't believe it exists? So strong are these bonds that every piece of information about our celebrities is valuable to you. When we insert famous faces into your eyeline, you're guaranteed to stop and look.
The need to gather social information about the people around us who we perceive as influential and powerful is something that is embedded deep within us. There are some studies that have been done at Duke University on rhesus monkeys. And they can do one of two things. And they have a little device hooked up to the eyes so people can see which way the monkeys are looking at. And if they look at one screen, they get a squirt of juicy juice, which is, you know, payment, reward. Or they can look at another screen and see a series of pictures. And what Platt found was, is that these monkeys were willing to give up food or pay for two things. One were to look at the hindquarters of females. Okay, I don't need to explain that. And the second were the dominant monkeys in the group. But why would they give up food? Why would they pay, in effect, to look at the pictures of the dominant members of their group? And the answer is that that information is, it's valuable social information. So the more I know about the dominant monkey in my group, when he eats, where he sleeps, who he likes to mate with, and that way increase the chances of my own survival. But that mechanism is still firing. It's like a ghost ship. And we're not getting anything out of it. We're not ingratiating ourselves to them. We're not enhancing our own abilities to survive. But the mechanism still fires, 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 and we're looking at these pictures.
Not long after the death of Michael Jackson, Chris Hedges focused on this mega celebrity as exemplifying all that's wrong with celebrity culture, capitalism, and the American soul. Some parts of this passage I broadcast perhaps a year ago. Other parts I'm now broadcasting for the first time. Here's Chris Hedges.
In celebrity culture, we destroy what we worship. The commercial exploitation of Michael Jackson's death was orchestrated by the corporate forces that rendered Jackson insane. Jackson, robbed of his childhood and surrounded by vultures that preyed on his fears and weaknesses, was so consumed by self-loathing, he carved his African-American face into a Caucasian death mask. He hid his apparent pedophilia behind a Peter Pan illusion of eternal childhood. He could not disentangle his public and his private self. He became a commodity, a product, one to be sold, used, and manipulated. He was infected by the moral nihilism and personal disintegration that is at the core of corporate culture. And his fantasies of eternal youth, delusions of majesty, and desperate, disfiguring quests for physical transformation were an expression of our own yearning. Jackson was a reflection of us in the extreme. His memorial service, a variety show with a coffin, had an average of 31.1 million television viewers. It was the final episode of the long-running Michael Jackson series. The stories that enthrall us most are real-life stories, early fame, wild success, and then a long, bizarre, and macabre emotional train wreck. O.J. Simpson offered a tamer version of the same plot, so does Britney Spears. Jackson, by the end, was heavily in debt and had weathered a $22 million out-of-court settlement to Jordy Chandler, as well as 7 counts of child sexual abuse and 2 counts of administering an intoxicating agent in order to commit a felony. Jackson reflected back to us our physical and psychological disintegration, especially as many struggle with overwhelming debt, loss of status, and deep personal confusion. The lurid drama of Jackson's personal life meshed with the ongoing dramas on television, in movies, and the news. News thrives on these real-life stories, especially those involving celebrities. News reports on television are mini-dramas. They provide a star, a villain, a supporting cast, a good-looking host, and a dramatic and often unexpected ending. In Fahrenheit 451, Ray Bradbury's novel about a future dystopia, people spend most of the day watching giant television screens that show endless scenes of police chases and criminal apprehensions. Life, Bradbury understood, once it was packaged, scripted, given a narrative, and filmed, became the most compelling form of entertainment. And Jackson was a great show. He deserved a great finale. Those who created Jackson's public persona and turned him into a piece of property, first as a child and finally as a corpse, encased in a $15,000 golden casket, are the agents, publicists, marketing departments, promoters, scriptwriters, television and movie producers, advertisers, video technicians, photographers, bodyguards, recording executives, wardrobe consultants, fitness trainers, pollsters, public announcers, and television news personalities who orchestrate the vast stage of celebrity for profit. They are the puppet masters. No one achieves celebrity status. No cultural illusion is swallowed as reality without these armies of cultural enablers and intermediaries. The producers at the Staples Center in Los Angeles made sure the 18,000 attendees and television audience and even the BBC devoted 3 hours to the tribute, watched a funeral that was turned into another maudlin form of uplifting popular entertainment. The memorial service for Jackson was a celebration of celebrity. There was the queasy sight of groups of children, including his own, singing over the coffin. Brooke Shields, fighting back tears, recalled how she and a 33-year-old Jackson, who always maintained that he was a straight male, broke into Elizabeth Taylor's room the night before her wedding because Michael was too excited to wait until morning to see the wedding gown. Shields and Jackson at Taylor's wedding then, quote, pretended to be the mother and father of Elizabeth Taylor. It sounds weird, Shields said, but we made it real. There were photo montages in which a shot of Michael Jackson shaking hands with Nelson Mandela was immediately followed by one of him with Kermit the Frog. Celebrity culture reduces all of the famous to the same level. Fame is its own denominator, and every anecdote told about Jackson seemed to confirm that when you spend your life as a celebrity, you have no idea who you are. And yet, we live in a culture where we measure our lives by these celebrities. We seek to be like them. We emulate their look and behavior. We escape the messiness of real life through the fantasy of their stardom. We too long to attract admiring audiences for our grand, ongoing life movie. We try to see ourselves moving through our life as a camera would see us, mindful of how we hold ourselves, how we dress, what we say. We invent movies that play inside our heads with us as stars. We wonder how an audience would react. Celebrity culture has taught us, almost unconsciously, to generate interior, personal screenplays. We have learned ways of speaking and thinking that grossly disfigure the way we relate to the world and those around us. Neil Gabler, who has written wisely about this, argues that celebrity culture is not a convergence of consumer culture and religion, so much as a hostile takeover of religion by consumer culture. Jackson desperately feared growing old. He believed he could manipulate race and gender. He transformed himself through surgery and perhaps female hormones from a brown-skinned African-American male to a chalk-faced androgynous figure with no clear sexual identity, And while he pushed these boundaries to the extreme, he only did what many do. There were 12 million cosmetic plastic surgery procedures performed last year in the United States. They were performed because in America, most human beings, rich and poor, famous and obscure, have been conditioned to view themselves as marketable commodities. They are objects, like consumer products. They have no intrinsic value. They must look fabulous and live on fabulous sets. They must remain young. They must achieve notoriety and money, or the illusion of it, to be a success. And it does not matter how they get there. The moral nihilism of this court culture licenses a dark voyeurism into other people's humiliation, pain, weakness, and betrayal. Education, building community, honesty, transparency, and sharing are qualities that will see you ridiculed and voted off any reality show. Celebrities that can no longer generate publicity, good or bad, vanish. Life, these shows teach, is a brutal world of unadulterated competition and a constant quest for notoriety and attention. The cult of the self, which Jackson embodied, dominates our culture. This cult has within it the classic traits of psychopaths: superficial charm, grandiosity and self-importance, a need for constant stimulation, a penchant for lying, deception, and manipulation, and the incapacity for remorse or guilt. Jackson, from his phony marriages to the portraits of himself dressed as royalty, to his insatiable hunger for new toys, to his questionable relationship with young boys, had all these qualities. And this is also the ethic promoted by corporations. It is the ethic of unfettered capitalism. It is the misguided belief that personal style and personal advancement, mistaken for individualism, are the same as democratic equality. It is the celebration of image over substance. Once fame and wealth are achieved, they become their own justification, their own morality. How one gets there is irrelevant. And it is this perverted ethic that gave us Wall Street bankers and investment houses that willfully trashed the global economy, stole money from tens of millions of small shareholders who had bought stock in these corporations for retirement or college. And the heads of these corporations, like the winners on a reality television program who lied and manipulated others to succeed, have walked away with hundreds of millions of dollars in bonuses and compensation. The ethic of Wall Street is the ethic of celebrity.
Thanks to James Corbett for bringing Star Suckers to my attention. www.corbettreport.com. Thanks to Ethan Osland of Black Mask Winnipeg for the excellent live recording of Chris Hedges. And thank you for listening to New World Notes. Check out newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Illegitimai non carborundum and ciao.